Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's clinical focus is on gluten. And to depart from our usual way of doing clinical focus, I'm inviting a Hoffman Center team member, Layla Mudin, who is usually working with me on our weekly Q&A with Layla. This is not a Q&A. We will not be taking listener questions. We will do that on another session. But she is the expert on how to implement diet changes at the Hoffman Center. For those of you not familiar with Layla is a registered dietitian. She also has an advanced master's degree in the area of nutrition. So without further ado, here's Layla. How you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Good. So the theme of today's clinical focus is gluten, but specifically how to detect hidden sources of gluten. But first, let's frame the issue. What is gluten? Why should we be concerned about it? You know, everybody's going on gluten-free diets. Is it a fad? Is it for real? Those are some of the questions we want to address.
Yeah, well, what is gluten? Gluten is actually a protein, actually the subfraction gliadin, which tends to be more problematic for what we know for now. It may be more than that, but gluten can be problematic because many people are intolerant to it. In the extreme sense, people who have celiac disease can't handle any gluten at all. They shouldn't have not even a nanogram of gluten. Gluten is basically a 33 amino acid peptide that causes a lot of problems that we really, as human beings, don't have the enzymes to digest. What's happened more in America, why is gluten sensitivity or gluten intolerance more prevalent now than, say, 50 years ago, is A, we know more about it, but B, our wheat crop has been hybridized over and over to contain more gluten. Gluten is a glue. For bakers, for chefs, this is very desirable because gluten adds the elasticity, the texture to a food product, a baked product, to give it more texture, a better mouthfeel, and all of that.
So we don't like that coarse, you know, crunchy peasant bread. We like that sort of spongy bagels and cakes and, you know, the things that, because gluten is glutinous. Yes. I've actually, I used to be macrobiotic, and we used to make a dish called seitan. And in seitan, we take the wheat, and we get rid of the starch, and we keep the protein, which is gluten. And I'll tell you, it was so glutinous once that I was making it at home, and I thought I would have to, you know, call the emergency people to extricate me from this tub of gluten that I made because it was so gluey and glutinous. I was hoping that someone would come home and help me extricate myself from this big pot of gluten because it was just a gluey, gooey mess. And I could, you know, I was like, it was.
You mean you couldn't add more flour?
It was almost like I fell into a tub of Elmer's glue. You know, and couldn't get my hands apart. So it is glutinous. So yeah, actually, I was talking to I don't know whether people have heard this podcast before hearing this one, but I spoke to an expert the other day. He's Dr. Stephen Olmsted about biofilms, and we did a podcast on that subject. Very interesting podcast, and he has a theory about the incidence of celiac disease. And actually, it's not just his idea. A lot of people have suggested this, is that we may be seeing more gluten intolerance because we have more dysbiosis and candida and yeast overgrowth, and that we're disturbing our gastrointestinal tracts with antibiotics and add acids, and we're not breastfeeding enough, and we're taking chemicalized foods and chlorinated water, and we're disturbing our balance in our gut. And as a result, wheat, which may have in previous eras been innocuous, it has the opportunity to interact with some of these factors that render the gastrointestinal lining cells more sensitive to the invasion of yeast. There's actually some cross-reactivity between candida or yeast and gluten, and somehow they sort of co-conspire to get our guts in an uproar and cause systemic problems.
That's true. And especially something like candida, its increase in intestinal permeability, what we call leaky gut, and that's when it also causes a problem, because then you've got bigger or less digested food particles coming through those barriers, and the immune system is then reacting. And gluten is often a source in many autoimmune conditions. Wow, I mean, I could think of it. There are many, many autoimmune conditions associated with gluten, thyroid, Hashimoto's, even Graves' disease, other things like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus. We always look.
Even vitiligo. Even vitiligo, the condition of vitiligo, like those light spots on the skin, the Michael Jackson disease, thought to be related
vitiligo,
to gluten. B12 insufficiency, pernicious anemia. That's an autoimmune disease, so many different types of problems. And brain disorders. Of course, we have the whole wonderful book, Grain Brain, by Dr. Yes. David Perlmutter, who we've interviewed frequently here on Intelligent Medicine Podcast, who theorizes that there can be neurological problems. And we've seen that with some of our patients. I can recall several patients who have Alzheimer's-like symptoms or who have Parkinson's-like symptoms or MS-like
ataxia.
Symptoms. Balance problems, serious balance problems, and they have celiac disease, it turns out, and nobody bothered to investigate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's fascinating how we're finding this more and more, but, celiac disease before was not, it's still not tested often enough, it's not looked at often enough. I remember you bringing to my attention a case study in the New England Journal of Medicine of a person coming in with varied symptoms and all kinds of differential diagnoses, and finally it was celiac disease. So
it was like it mystified the doctors for years. The average time to diagnosis for someone with celiac disease I think is something around 20 years, from the symptoms to the actual diagnosis. I think there's a greater awareness about it now, but certainly when I was in my medical training, there just 70% of people with that condition got missed.
So it's important for anyone who's on a gluten-free diet, whether they have celiac disease or are intolerant to gluten, to become very, very well-versed in how to find sources of gluten and how to identify, the various language which may stand in for gluten, like hydrolyzed vegetable protein, inulin may contain gluten, malt, things of that nature. I mean, it's a very long list, but it's not. You could certainly learn it over time, but it's very important to look for labeling. The labeling laws, anything marked gluten-free, means generally less than 20 parts per million is basically what's allowed. Does that mean it's completely gluten-free? No, but it's gluten-free enough to be safe, as is determined so far. So a gluten-free product, that's basically what you look for, is anything marked gluten-free, but we almost must look at the ingredients as well. So
right.
This is also very important.
I guess there's a couple of ways that people can go wrong if they're trying to go gluten-free. One is if you go to a restaurant and you can say, well, I like a piece of fish, and it's like, okay, the fish comes. Well, there's fish inherently doesn't have wheat on it, but there may be a little sauce on the wheat, a wheat containing gravy or sauce, or there may be some light breading. I know that when I've
breading
ordered
breading or flour,
right? When I've ordered just plain filet of sole, it comes with a little light crust, which is nice, imparts a nice flavor to it. But that's a source of wheat that could be significant for someone who's very sensitive.
Sure. And just to give a little overview of the grains that contain gluten, people often think if they're gluten-free or they have wheat sensitivity, that they could still eat spelt. But spelt is what wheat was anciently.
I had this. This actually happened to me. It was funny. I went to this hipster kind of. It's actually a bar restaurant, and I went for brunch on a Sunday, which is kind of a very cool thing to do in Brooklyn. You go to one of these.
Was it like in Brooklyn?
It was in Brooklyn. It was not in Bushwick. No, Bushwick is even more like hipsterish. Uh-huh. This is in what's the hipster part of Brooklyn? Whatever.
Williamsburg.
Okay. Yeah, it was in Williamsburg. Yeah, it was Williamsburg. So it's like place where it's really jumping probably around 2 a.m. But on a Sunday morning. At around 10:30 or 11, it's really quiet and it's a nice place to have breakfast. And so I go in there and they have the breakfast special. I said, "Do you have gluten-free bread?" He says, "Yes, we have spelt bread." And this is like this this goateed hipsterish young waiter there who's like being very clever. Say, "Yeah, of course. We've got spelt. That's wheat." That's not wheat, so it's wheat. It's gluten. Whatever. And I pointed out, and he was very accommodating when I pointed out. I said, for people who have gluten problems, spelt is not on the menu. And it's, oh my goodness, and he told the chef, and it was like a whole consciousness raising session for them, because they've been palming off this spelt as a gluten free product on their, fellow Williamsburg Brooklynites there.
Right.
Another one by you is you go to these places and they have these what are called ancient grains. Kamut, for example. Kamut.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds good. I mean, that's not wheat, right?
Well, it's gluten. Unfortunately, yes, exactly. And I actually had a conversation yesterday. We had a new patient who was asking me about the ancient grains and everything, and she was giving me, I said, no, that's still a source of gluten.
Right.
And we talked in depth about all of that. But another interesting story I had, my brother-in-law was in the wine business for a period of time, and he was visited by a food manufacturer, a pasta manufacturer from Italy. My brother-in-law's from Rome. And we were having dinner one evening. It was over the holidays last year, and he had brought over a pasta that my brother-in-law prepared, and it was wonderful and all that, but he was talking about, yes, and we also carry a gluten-free line and everything. I said, oh, wonderful. I said, what kind of grain is that made from? And he said, farro.
Right.
And I said, well, that contains gluten, too. And he was not aware. So then he went back and had to call his company. I said, farro is definitely a gluten source.
I've seen that at this very fancy Italian emporium called Italy. They have all these very exotic grains, and you don't see the word wheat on it. So you go, oh, this must be fine. And I tell you, that entire place, you can't find any any gluten-free pastas. Everything has got some weird, kamut, spelt, farro, whatever. And all of those things are in the gluten family.
And, there are other, more nuanced things like vinegars.
Right.
Most vinegars are pretty much okay, but malt vinegar, not so much. And a lot of people look at me like, who uses malt vinegar? Well, it's a Great Britain thing. When you order a plate of French fries, not that I'm advising anyone to eat French fries.
They do it on fish and chips.
Yeah.
They hand you the fish and chips like in a rolled up newspaper, and then you put malt. You don't put ketchup on it. You put malt vinegar or mayonnaise on it. That's the way they eat it. Get the newsprint on the French fries, but it doesn't matter. I guess it's okay.
And the main grains containing gluten besides wheat are barley, bulgur, kamut, as you mentioned, rye, spelt, triticale, any of the pastas and breads that contain these, but also oats. Now, I want to be clear about oats.
Right. Yeah, this is controversial. This is a source of major controversy, so why don't you lay it out? Because some people think, because we use the mnemonic B-R-O-W. I point to my eyebrow and I say, that's how you know the things that you should not have, barley, rye, oats, and wheat. And the O is kind of optional. And actually, I saw a study in the New England Journal of Medicine saying that oats were not part of that gluten family. But why don't you explain?
Yeah, well, oats do not inherently contain gluten, but often because they're manufactured in the same facility as other gluten-containing products, they become contaminated. Mm-hmm. They can also become contaminated if, say, in a wheat field in, western Iowa or somewhere, after they harvest that crop, they then plant oats. They may also be contaminated that way. So it's very important for, if you're interested in eating oatmeal, to find a certified gluten-free brand. I think Bob's Red Mill is one of them.
I see. So in other words, it's got to be certified, and that may provide you with an additional measure of caution.
20 parts per million.
Great. Yeah. Okay. That's a good tip, because it's lovely to be able to have just pure oatmeal if you're missing all those other grains, mm-hmm. but you have to be careful.
Oh, and I do want to bring up another controversial topic. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's an answer to this yet, unless, Dr. Hoffman, you may know yourself.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of patients who are diving into wheatgrass.
Yes.
And even
what's up with wheatgrass?
Yes. Mm-hmm. But they'll say to me, no, but it's the wheatgrass. It's not the same thing.
It doesn't have that much protein in it. Yeah.
Yeah. When I pull out Peter Green's book, it is a big question mark.
I see.
Yeah,
and Peter Green
is
an eminent gastroenterologist here in New York at Columbia, who is one of the world's authorities on celiac disease.
Yeah,
and we heard him. We actually heard him lecture. You and I, we went to go hear him lecture, and he was great.
97th Street Y. Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm. Until he started talking about vitamins, and then he said, "But vitamins are useless." You know, I thought, there's this brilliant guy, and he's talking about
He shouldn't go where he doesn't know.
I know. I think he's the man when it comes to celiac disease, that he's done
Absolutely.
Fabulous work. Actually, I credit to him, because he also has extended the concept that, you know, it's not an either-or thing. Either you have celiac disease or you're fine with grains. He actually talks about a spectrum of sensitivity from full-blown celiac, where you develop severe gastro problems or systemic problems with even a smidgen of gluten, versus some people who have gluten intolerance. They may not test positive for celiac disease, but they do a heck of a lot better without gluten. They feel better. They have less gastrointestinal bloating. They have less brain fog.
See that a lot, yeah.
And and I think that's one of the controversial areas, because a lot of gastroenterologists are very stingy about handing out the diagnosis of gluten intolerance. I say if a patient has anti-gluten antibodies and or just on a basis of trial and error, they feel much better off of gluten, that warrants a gluten-free diet. The patient who feels a little better off gluten may not need to be quite so stringent about staying off it if they don't have celiac disease. But you know, certainly this is, there's a lot of snarky articles in the press now about gluten intolerance and kind of ranking on people who think they're gluten intolerant, sort of like one of those like California things, you know, where everybody's gluten intolerant. But I think it's real significant. I think it makes a big difference for a lot of our patients. It's a huge...
We see it all the time. I mean, the real tell is that, you know, when you embark on a gluten-free diet, and you expect a certain symptom to go away, that's fine. But there's a whole line of other symptoms that you didn't really think about or really didn't even experience before the elimination of gluten. And that is what is the real tell here for something that's really working. I'm talking about, you know, versus the placebo effect. Oh, I'm doing this, therefore I should feel better. But guess what? All these other things I didn't even know I had, now I'm at a higher level of wellness where I never was before. What's that about? So I think that's the real tell for people getting off gluten.
There's the athlete, tennis player Djokovic, who's always ranked among the top five men, who embarked on a gluten-free diet, made a big difference for him. He does not have celiac disease, I don't believe, but did so much better off of gluten, and there are actually entire sports teams who've adopted that approach. So it can be very beneficial. All right, so this is a logical breakpoint for us. What we're going to do is divide this podcast into two parts, as we customarily do. When we return, we're going to name names and talk specifics in terms of hidden sources of gluten. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's guest and expert is Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. Our clinical focus is on gluten, and this is Intelligent Medicine.